Hi, friends. I'm Kara Kay, and this is the Asking for a Friend podcast, a show for the woman who has questions about herself, the church, and the world. We are all asking hard questions that affect us as women in the culture that surrounds us, and we are looking for a safe place to ask them. But don't worry, I know you're only asking for a friend. All right, friends, welcome to another episode of Asking for a Friend. Now, I'm a woman, as you know, I have quite a bit of hands-on experience as a woman, and I have done a lot of study in the book of Ephesians and looking at the household code. If you haven't heard this term before, it's what it's talking about when Paul's writing about women, wives, submit to your husbands. Now, in our modern culture, women, we want to feel like equals, and looking at these scriptures can sometimes make us feel really stuck. I won't speak for all women because I'm not all women. And I know some women are really thrilled to have those household codes and stick to those and those gender rules. But a lot of women today feel trapped by that. And we want to live out a faithful life to Christ and follow scripture, but not feel dismissed with our, you know, quote unquote, feminist ideals. And so what really changed for me as I started studying this was the mutuality of the statements that as I dug deeper into the scriptures, I learned that the word submit is actually not even in the Greco-Roman culture. It was not, that word is not in the Greek. And so that the way that we look at it today was not really what Paul was intending. Mm. It was more of a mutual respect and love. And so this teaching from Paul was really, really radical because he was flipping culture on its head and saying, you know, slaves, obey your masters, but masters, you know, respect and have this mutual submission and respect for your slaves. Mm. The same with husbands and wives and all of that. So I just wanted to kick us off and give a little bit of background and my heart on this, because this teaching of this mutual submission is really an act of service and love and sacrifice and respect in the name of Christ. And it should be the foundation of our marriages, of our relationships, of our churches, because like Paul said, there's neither male nor female, Jew nor Gentile, all of these things, that we are one in Christ. And so it takes away this hierarchy and it really leaves room for the communal love that God intended for us. So as we get into that and looking at gender roles and looking at what is a woman's role in the house, in the church, I have invited my friend Megan to chat with me today about this. So Megan, welcome. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here.
All right. So as we dig a little deeper into this question of what's a woman's role, I want to hear your story. Why you're passionate about this, what set you on the course of really speaking for women, helping women find their voice? Where did you get started in that?
Yeah, I'll dive into that in a second, but you talked about Ephesians 5 and I just feel like I had to say something about
I got to jump in.
because I do think that part of scripture has been really misused. And if we even look at how that scripture opens, so a lot of times, you know, we have these page breaks or these slot breaks. And so the beginning says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So even in the beginning, it's not saying just men submit to women and women submit to men. It's saying everyone should submit to one another. And I think we've really taken it out of context and promoted hierarchy that wasn't supposed to be there by saying only wives should submit to their husband. So I just had to say that. So hi, I'm Megan. I have a book coming out soon about women rising. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story and how I got started advocating for women and women's rights and why that's so important to me. So a little bit of my story is I grew up in the conservative evangelical church. I was raised to believe that my purpose as a woman was to ultimately serve the men in my life. So whether that was my father or when I got married, my husband, I was told to be available for them and that my only place really was in the home. I was discouraged from teaching, preaching, leading, not discouraged. It was sinful to do those things. And so, I really struggled with that. It felt wrong in my spirit. I didn't have the words to articulate it, or nor was I exposed to different teachings. So I went along with it.
Right.
I didn't know what else to do. And so eventually I graduated from college. I worked for a newspaper and hated it and decided that, you know, I was going to dedicate my life to serving God. As a woman in this context, I was left with two options in a way to serve God. And one was to become like a pastor's wife, and one was to become a missionary, because all of these other roles were excluded and from me as a woman. Mm-hmm. And so I chose to be a missionary. And so I went on this program called the World Race, which was an 11-country, 11-month mission trip, and very quickly started being exposed to the injustice against women. Mm-hmm. So the first month I was in Ireland, and I was experiencing a lot of sexism and misogyny from our contact there, saying that women should be seen and not heard, that men's worship should be audible while women should be inaudible, that women were unholy and thus had to have their heads covered whenever they were worshiping. All of these things that were, he thought, were from the Bible, and taking them to basically tell women, us, that we were incapable of leading ourselves, that we needed to be in God's order, which is to follow the men around us and submit and obey them. And so I remember that being really hard for me, because it was something I had grown up with. But at this time, I had been exposed to enough teachings where I started to question this. So when I talk about Ephesians, you know, we just talked about Ephesians 5, and we dug into it. Okay, well, I don't think we're getting the full story here the way you're presenting it.
Right.
And it was the first time I realized that I wasn't alone in questioning these. Like, this has been preached to me my whole life. I never talked to anyone about it because I thought I shouldn't, and it was sinful. And what I found is that there was a group of, you know, about five other women who felt the same way I did. And so that's when I think the beginning of, like, God was starting to have me question these teachings that I had been taught. And then several months later, I was in Kenya. I was giving talks at schools, and young girls would come up to me afterwards and ask me about female circumcision. And I had remembered from my women's study class in college that, okay, I don't know what is female circumcision. I know it's female genital mutilation. Mm-hmm. And so for those who aren't familiar, and just trigger warning, this will get a little graphic. This is when the woman, or the young girl, because this happens around the age of 10 to 12, has her clitoris removed, or in a more extreme version, her whole external genitalia. Mm-hmm. And not only is it extremely painful, and the purpose is to make sex extremely painful, as a way of keeping women's sexuality in check, but it's actually extremely dangerous and causes tons of health issues, not when it's being done, but for the lifetime of the woman. So for example, sometimes because it's not done with the trained practitioner, because there's no anesthesiologist or anything like that, just a woman, generally a woman that just without proper tools, just cuts it off. And girls can often bleed to death during this procedure. Wow. And if they do survive the procedure, then they have tons of issues with urination. Childbirth is extremely dangerous, because often there's a lot of scar tissue that makes the hole smaller, making the baby get stuck. So the baby dies inside the mother. Right. And a lot of these women don't have access to, modern healthcare, and that sometimes the baby dying will kill the mother as well, or it will cause a host of other issues. And so it's strongly condemned by the World Health Organization, yet these young girls were asking me about it and starting to question it. And so that question was asked to me a couple of times before I realized, I think this is happening here, where I had to come to terms, I think this is happening here. And soon enough, some girls did tell me, we're being circumcised, like we're starting to question it. All of these women have been. And in addition to that, they were also telling me how hard it was for them to get an education, that they had to fight to go to school, that while their male counterparts or their brothers were encouraged to go to school, they were responsible for all the chores. They were raised to believe that school was unnecessary because their place was in the home. Right. And so these girls were fighting really hard to get an education. And also on top of that, they were telling me the stories of sexual and physical violence that they were surviving. And so I started to notice this tie between this patriarchal idea that women belong in the home and the abuse that these women were enduring, these young girls. And it was a couple months after that, that I was in India and I was working with trafficked women who had been trafficked from Nepal. So what was happening there is India has a better economy than Nepal. And so traffickers will go from India to Nepal, go to these impoverished villages and say, hey, we can give your child an opportunity to get a better job and to send money back and get the education they want. Unfortunately, these traffickers are actually taking children and putting them into the slave trade, whether that's forced labor or the sex trade. Mm-hmm. And these parents don't know and they never see their children again. And so what happened where I was in a city called Navi Mumbai, and women had been trafficked from Nepal, were in the sex trade. And on top of this, the children that they had were when they were very young, had to be under the beds while the mother was being raped. And so there was a man there that we worked with, and he heard this story from one of the young children. And he said, well, I want to help in the way that I can. And so he started a daycare center for these children. And so he wanted to, of course, help the women, but because the women were technically property of the pimp, they would get violent and kill if that property was messed with, or if we went to the cops had been bought off. Mm. And so it was in this setting that I met a young girl who was being raised by the pimp who sold her mother. She was malnourished. She wasn't cared for. There was something about her that I was just really drawn to her. And I shortly found out that she had a hearing impediment where she couldn't hear if you talked, but if you yelled, she could hear. So something that could probably be corrected with hearing aids. Mm-hmm. But as it was, she was being raised by the pimp who sold her mother. And we have no idea what was happening to her at night, because she didn't have a way to communicate that. Right. And even then, what could we do?
Right.
And so my contact, I was like, can we kidnap her? And of course, the same story, like it's not possible. Mm-hmm. And he just told me to pray and love. And that was something I think that just flipped a switch for me. Like I'm like skipping over a lot of my story.
I'm sure.
A lot of oppression of women, mm-hmm. like in every country I had been to. But that was kind of like the breaking point, that there's little girls being bought and sold and don't have a way to communicate with anyone. Fortunately, the story has a more happy ending in that he stayed in that area and was able to get her out, and she was given hearing aids, or what he said was hearing medicine, where she can hear, and now she's in school and reading and writing. And so that ends, fortunately, in a happy story. But this story happens all around the world.
Right.
And I couldn't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so my sending organization asked me to start an inner healing program for women, where we basically gave women a safe place to tell their stories. And we started in the United States, and then we went around the country again, or went around the world again. And it was after living with a woman who had been trafficked, who had come out of the sex trade in the Philippines for 2 months, that I was starting to really notice a tie between this patriarchal mindset and the abuse these women were enduring. And then the night it became most clear is one night I was in the Philippines and I was talking to a woman. It was her first night in the bars. And so to give a little backstory on how that works there, there's a lot of bars in Southeast Asia that are catered to expat men that are not from the country, that have more money.
Okay.
A lot of Australian, a lot of American, mm-hmm. a lot of Canadian, a lot of European men will go to this place to buy women. Mm-hmm. These women often are providing for not only their children, but many, many, many family members. And so it's not like they were kidnapped. A lot of these women, for example, with climate change happening, a lot of these provinces are getting wiped out. These areas where their family lived on the land and was feeding their family through the land, and they're getting wiped out. And so they'll send their oldest daughter to the city, hey, please find a way so we can survive and not starve to death. And so these women without an education are sent to a city and become easy prey for these bars, because they're like, well, I have no other way to feed. Sometimes they go into these bars thinking they're just working in a bar, but quickly find out it's a lot more than that. Or in some cases, they normally go in. In some cases, they're forced into it by family members saying, this is what you're good for, like provide money. So I think we also have to, like, they're not being kidnapped, but there's a lot of deception, a lot of lack of options, a lot of things that are leading them there. And so I was talking to a woman, it was her first night there, trying to provide for her child. She was with an abusive boyfriend that wanted her there. She had burn marks all over her body from cigarette burns. And I was talking to her, and the ministry I partnered with put these girls all the way through college, or put these women all the way through college. And so it gave them opportunity to provide for their dependents, while also getting a college education, giving them more choices. And so I was talking to her, she seemed interested. And then these six drunk men came up and tried to take her from me, to buy her. And she said no. I said no. Technically, she should be able to say no, but they weren't taking no for an answer. They started grabbing her. And I had a friend run over and say, why don't you just buy her first? So I ended up buying her, but these men still tried to take her. And so I got in the fight with the bar manager saying, this girl's mine, which is just a completely crazy argument to have. Mm-hmm. I paid for her. I deserve her, whatever. Eventually won the argument. But throughout this argument, these men who wanted this woman got more and more angry and heated. And they were also very intoxicated. And they just took a girl from the stage. And I remember that girl looking back at us with she was terrified, complete horror in her face. And I, in that moment, I just felt like I made the situation worse, right? Mm-hmm. This woman was so easily replaced. And instead of just drunk men, there were six angry drunk men. And I had had women I had worked with be murdered by people in the past. And so I just felt, what am I doing here? They're so easily replaced. How can we fight the demand? Yeah. And that was a question I was ruminating in, on, when the next night I had an American man call my group over, and he was asking us why we were there. And we told him, and we asked him in return, why are you here? And he had this young girl under his arm. And he said, because women here are raised right. They know how to respect men. And this was in the middle of a tirade of how women didn't know their place. So he had to come here. Women in the West, in the United States, did not know their place. So he came here to get the respect that he was deserved and entitled to. And as he was speaking, I was immediately brought back to my childhood and hearing almost the same thing come out of my pastor's mouth. We think of books of love and respect, right? That's so focused on the respect that the man is entitled to and deserves. Mm-hmm. And even in this book, it says the man deserves respect without conditions. Mm. And it was just this huge moment of epiphany for me, that this idea that women are here for the service of men, to respect men, to submit to men, was literally what this man was telling me why he went to buy women from the sex trade. And at the same time, this was the kind of teaching and theology that I grew up with. My role as a woman was to serve men, respect men. I was there for serving them, essentially.
Right, right.
And it broke everything for me. I realized that the conservative church was complicit in these women's oppression. Mm-hmm. And I quit my job, started advocating for women and really trying to fight the demand, the whole idea that men are entitled to respect, to the bodies of women, that we are there to pleasure them. Even if we look about like evangelical marriage books, women are supposed to be available for their husbands sexually at all times. Right. Like, of course, this kind of thinking is, it's present in our culture, but it's present in our church, and it's causing to the abuse and harm of women. And so that's what changed everything for me. And that's how, one of the reasons I wrote this book.
Wow. Wow. I don't even have the words. That it's just incredible. I think we forget that these things are happening. Mm-hmm. When we get into our bubbles and we close our eyes and we don't want to see the injustice going on around us, and we don't realize how even we as women are sometimes complicit in this as well, because we just allow it to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm similar to you. I grew up in pretty conservative evangelical churches, and this has been something that's been heavy on my heart for the last few years as well, because it's like, no, as I look at scripture and I see the way that Jesus interacted with women, and then I see the way that the patriarchy of the church interacts with women, it doesn't line up. Mm-hmm. How do we take steps forward in this? What do you say to the church? Like, how can we make a change?
Yeah. So I think that I talk about the biblical principle of like, how many times does Jesus and God teach us discernment by looking at the fruit of our teachings? Like he says, we know a tree by its fruit. So what is the fruit of these patriarchal teachings that we grow up in? So besides my story and my experience, let's just take a look at the number of sexual assault scandals, sexual abuse scandals. We just had Ravi Zacharias. Yeah. You know, that was all over the news. Just a week ago, we had a young man kill women that he viewed as a temptation. Mm-hmm. He was a Baptist. They described this man as religious and devout. Right. These are just two examples in the past like month or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of this kind of theology, or people from this kind of theology harming women. Okay. So we're looking at the fruit. These are just, I told you my story. Mm-hmm. Those stories, we need to look at why are so many sexual abuse, sexual assault scandals happening in our church? Why? We have to ask ourselves, this is not a result of individual sin. This is systematic. Yeah. Systemic. This is a lot bigger than just one guy screwing up. This is, why does it keep happening again and again and again and again? We have to ask ourselves that, and we have to understand that this is a fruit, a bad, rotten fruit of the gender theology that we have been teaching. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think, is anti-biblical. And I'll go into that. So for example, let's look at the example of Jesus. You know, he is my favorite.
Oh yeah, the best. Yeah,
he's the best. But the way he interacts with women and pushes women past their gender norms. So let's look at the story of Mary and Martha, for example. We're aware that back then, the culture was far more patriarchal than it is today. Women mm-hmm. weren't really even allowed to interact with men at all. They weren't supposed to really be outside the home at all. Their role was to, you know, serve men. They were kind of the property of men. And so we get to this story where Martha, you know, Jesus is coming to Mary and Martha's house. Mm-hmm. Martha is performing in the way that she was supposed to. She's, you know, preparing the house, she's cleaning the house, and she's doing what she's supposed to do, what she's been trained to do. Mm-hmm. However, Mary is breaking every single gender role prescribed to her. She is sitting at the feet of Jesus. She's not supposed to be with men. Remember, this is like very anti their culture. She's not supposed to especially sit at the feet of a rabbi, because to sit at the feet of a rabbi meant that you intended to become a rabbi yourself. So even that was so offensive. Mm-hmm. And she's not even doing or helping her sister with what she's supposed to be doing as a woman. Mm-hmm. And so of course, Martha is upset by this. Hey, Jesus, tell Mary to like get in here and help me. Mm-hmm. In one sentence, I feel like Jesus just destroys those gender roles, because he says, Mary has chosen what is better and it will not be taken from her. Mm. Mary has let's think about what that actually means. Mary has broken her gender norms. She has believed in herself enough to think that she's capable to be in the presence and the space of men, to learn from a man so she can teach, so she can be a disciple, so she can be an apostle. She has been so offensive on so many levels, and yet Jesus defended her. He said, this is what is better. Mm-hmm. And so as I've begun to speak for women in the church, I have faced the grossest pushback from Christians. Yeah. I have been told that I'm sending people to hell, that I'm going to hell, that I'm a false teacher. I have been called all of the names in the book because I believe in the dignity and power and equality of women. And I've been told I can't be a Christian and believe in women's rights. Mm-hmm. I can't be a feminist and a Christian.
Right, right. It's shocking to me, because Jesus was that.
He was
standard for that. And we, in our churches, we claim that we are Christ followers, but mm-hmm. we don't look like Christ followers when we're mm-hmm. not acting like him and treating people and loving our neighbors and uplifting women the mm-hmm. way that he did.
Yeah. And I mean, if we look at Jesus' example, like, I feel like what he said again and again, give up your power, serve others, bring people in from the margins. Yet in the church, it seems like we're wanting to protect our power. Yes. We're wanting to exclude people on the margins. We're not actually following the gospel of Jesus Christ when we exclude people and create false hierarchies, which have bad, rotten fruit. Because like, even if we look at, for example, racism, which is also very present in our churches, it's this whole idea that there's less than. The Bible has historically has been used to subjugate people. That's not the point of the Bible, but that's what it's been used for. And right. for slavery was justified for centuries by Christians mm-hmm. because they were the son of Ham. There's yep. slavery in the Bible, so we can have this, you know, slave submit to your master. So this whole idea of the Bible being so, I mean, if we're against slavery, and my goodness, we should be, right. we also need to examine these teachings about women that are creating hierarchy, excluding them from the place that that Jesus empowered them to be part of. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating to me. Yeah. And so for me, when I struggle with that, I just say, I have chosen what is better and it will not be taken from
yes,
me.
Yes, that's right.
Having Jesus spoke to me, but it's been a journey and it's been really difficult and challenging.
I'm sure. Anytime you speak to something that's semi-controversial, mm-hmm. you get pushback. And mm-hmm. we've seen that for example, in my church, we just did a series that was called We Don't Talk About That. And which I love. That's what my podcast is all about. We ask big questions here. We talk about the hard things. And people don't like to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They don't like to be told, like, these things are wrong. And right. asking people to, like, consider and root out that evil in them. Mm-hmm. People don't want that. And especially the evangelical church. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a huge, huge concern. But then we do start seeing the fall of so many leaders because there's mm-hmm. these things going on in the background. And mm-hmm. so it becomes a huge challenge for sure. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear from you. What advice would you give a woman who really wants to find her place in this conversation? Maybe she's like us, she grew up in the evangelical church, she's always kind of felt silenced, but she's really wanting to find and use her voice. How would you encourage her?
Yeah. So I would first say, realize you're not alone. Cause I know for me, it was life-changing for me to realize, because I had been taught, like, I don't even question this. Like, if you right. do, you're bad. And so it creates this culture of secrecy and shame that we're not really honest with the things that we're questioning or that we might have doubts about. Mm-hmm. And so it makes, I think, our faith really shallow because we won't actually talk about the truth of what we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so I think number one, know that you're not alone. I think that was so important. Talk to one of your close friends and be like, hey, like, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but this is something that I've been feeling. Mm-hmm. Have you felt the same way? And I'm pretty confident that you're not the only one who's right. felt that way. And so I'd say find either a friend or two, or even like online is a great resource. There's lots of people. Like, I have a group called Faith and Feminism. You are not the only one out there. Yeah. And so find that community, realize that you're not alone, because you're actually really going to need a support system mm-hmm. if you kind of step against some of these teachings, because right. again, there's this protection of power and who has power. And when you question that power pushes back against you. And so I'd say it's really important to first have some kind of support system before you start making any grand steps. Because I know for me, my support system was absolutely essential. I would not be here speaking and writing books if it wasn't for my support system. And the second thing I would have to say is there's a lot of material that people have just not, like, we just haven't, no one talks about it. No one's, mm-hmm. like, we haven't been exposed to it. And so there's an incredible book that talks all about how the gender roles, it's called The Making of Biblical Womanhood by Beth yes. Alison Barr. And it talks all about these ideas that these gender roles that we've been given, they're not actually biblical at all. They're mm-hmm. actually completely historical and in line with historical movements. And so what right. we're seeing in the church with this is actually a result of historical events. Mm-hmm. And there's others, scholars like Carolyn Custis James. She actually wrote the foreword for my book, but she has, she's a Bible scholar and she's written incredible books. One of them is called Half the Church by her. And she also writes another book called Maelstrom that talks about these stories in the Bible and relates them to kind of see the fruit of these hierarchies that is created and the fruit of it. And so those are two really great resources that I highly recommend to yeah. someone starting to question that. But yeah, and then I would say encourage you to use your voice and have conversations. Because if you felt alone, I can bet you there's someone else. And that the more you speak up, the more we can take a stand against this, expose other people to resources, have these conversations, be brave enough to have these conversations. And I think that's how we can really change the culture in the church. Mm-hmm. But I just want to give a note of warning. You will get pushback and it that's will right. be hard. it'll be really difficult. You might have some friends say some really cruel things, but it is absolutely worth it because, like I said, I think it's biblical. I think it's what Jesus calls us to. I think Jesus calls us to upend oppressive systems. Mm-hmm. And surely we want the church to be a reflection of Christ and not power hierarchies. Mm-hmm. Of course we do. And so it's really important that we do speak up. And I think for me, it's so interesting that people have called me un-Christian mm-hmm. when I feel like speaking up for half the planet that's been oppressed is the most Christian thing I could do. Because I believe Jesus is a God who cares about justice mm-hmm. and he cares about equality. And the fact that these things are inequality is thriving is in our church, I think, is making the church sick. So those are the things I would recommend.
Yeah, that's a good word. And I would add to that, if you aren't getting pushback in some way, shape or form of the work that you're doing, of how you're growing, of how you're learning and studying, then you're probably just playing it safe. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I've learned. Not that you're out to be divisive, but if you are really here to make a difference, to step into those hard spaces, then you're going to get pushback. Jesus got pushback. He got mm-hmm. killed for it. There was attempted murder on him many, many times. He was the king of pushback. Mm-hmm. People did not, he wasn't there just to make everybody feel good and everything to be happy and easy. Mm-hmm. You're going to get pushback. And so I would encourage women in that as well. Don't let some of that pushback hold you back from doing the mm-hmm. work that we're called to mm-hmm. as women. It's time for us to step up as leaders and encourage mm-hmm. one another, lead one another. So
even if we look at who Jesus pushed back against, it's like mm-hmm. the religious elite. He's not like pushing back against the world or culture or whatever. He's pushing back against the religious elite who claim God's name. So when you talk this about this concept, don't take God's name in vain. Mm-hmm. I think taking God's name in vain is saying that you follow Christ and then oppressing people. That is God's name in vain.
Yes.
And so I think this whole idea, like, who is Jesus calling out? Who is he calling a brood of vipers? Who's saying that they're going out and making people twice the son of hell that you are?
Yeah.
It's the religious elite.
Right.
And so I think that's another question. If like you're getting pushback from like these large religious institutions, mm-hmm. so did Jesus. That was exactly the thing he was calling out. So I think that's also really important to note that it was the religious elite that he was so firm with.
So true. Yeah. And we want to be careful not to find ourselves in that camp of the religious elite just because mm-hmm. that's the comfortable place or that's where it's more popular to be. But we mm-hmm. want to be Mary. We want to be sitting at the mm-hmm. feet of Jesus, growing and learning so that we can become an apostle and we mm-hmm. can go and make a difference and love those that are marginalized. Mm-hmm. This has been amazing. I love chatting mm-hmm. with you. Would you share with my listeners where they can find you, where they can get a copy of your book coming out?
Yeah. So you can find my book wherever books are sold. I don't know like physically where they will be yet. But if you go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, my publisher is InterVarsity Press. It's a Christian publisher. You can find it. It's called Women Rising, Learning to Listen, Reclaiming Our Voice. My book comes out May 11th. So pre-order would mean the world to me. You'd probably actually get it before that date, as I've been told by my publisher. But yeah, and you can just follow me on Instagram, Megan Chance. I'm on Twitter, Megan Chance, the same name everywhere. My website, Megan Chance. I'm the only one in the world. So
hey, I'm the same way. If anybody hears Kara K. James, I'm the only one in the world. So. It's nice having a different name when it comes to that. So, okay, great. Well, I'll put links to everything in the show notes today. Megan, thank you. This has been a joy. I feel so encouraged walking away today.
Thank you.
I'm Kara K. James, and you've just listened to the Asking for a Friend podcast. I hope you are inspired and encouraged by these conversations to step out of the status quo and engage in conversations that matter. You can find the show notes for this episode and subscribe at karakjames.com/podcast. I also love connecting with you on Instagram and Facebook. I am at karak.james. You can also subscribe to my newsletter at karakjames.com/newsletter. This podcast is meant to provide you with a safe space to work through the questions you have about yourself, the church, and the world around you. Please never hesitate to reach out to me if you need a safe place to land. Thanks for listening, and keep asking questions. For a friend.